Two Guys, a Girl, and the Catholic Podcast, episode number 50.
Austin Catholic New Media presents Two Guys, a Girl, and a Catholic Podcast with Chris Williston, Christina Almanza, and Jason Elizondo.
Hello, and welcome to Two Guys, a Girl, and a Catholic Podcast. This is episode number 50. I am Chris Williston with Jason Elizondo and Christina Almanza. Together, we are Two Guys, One Girl, and this is a Catholic podcast. And as I've said at least 49 times before, if that is what you're looking for, you have come to the right place. Guys, we made it. Episode number 50, the half-century mark. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
We need some applause. We need, here in a live studio audience, well, maybe not so much, but recording via Skype as we always do. Let us say happy Easter to those of you out there listening to Two Guys, a Girl, and a Catholic Podcast. We are happy to be back after a two-week hiatus and recording episode number 50. We've got great things here on the show coming up and already have wonderful things lined up for the future of the show. So, to tease it out a little bit, I'm going to say thanks for tuning in for the first 50, but the next 50 is going to be even better. So as we get going here on the podcast, Jason, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm actually have broadband for the first time in about 4 or 5 episodes.
It's true. It's nice to not have you be in a car somewhere recording via 4G.
Yeah, and via a headset, I've actually got my mic back and everything, so it's a nice change of pace.
I was noticing that you do sound extra, you're silky smooth with your voice over there tonight here on the show.
Right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Silky smooth.
Silky smooth. That's right. Here on, Christina, what's going on in your world?
Oh, just staying busy and loving every minute.
Very good. Well,
I'm happy to be here tonight. Wonderful. Happy episode 50.
I'm happy to be back with you guys. And Christina, will you kick us off in prayer?
Oh, of course.
That'd be great.
In the name of Father, Son, the Holy Spirit. Amen. Thank you, Lord Jesus, for 50 episodes. Thank you for our listeners. And thank you for your will for us in our lives. May we be able to accept all that it is that you have in store. May we come to you with open arms, remember your divine mercy, and your unfathomable love and mercy for us. Please help us to go about our daily lives and be witnesses for you. And may we be able to show others what being Catholic truly means, and help us to tell your story and the story of being Catholic to others without fear and without reserve. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of your womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now at the hour of our death. Amen.
Amen. Hey, thank you so much, Christina. Now, when we left off with episode number 49, we had a lot of challenges. Number one, we challenged our listeners to listen to us talk about chocolate-covered ham in preparation for Easter. But I think
we got a lot of traction out of that one, too.
That's true. That was
a good one.
Yeah,
that's true.
That was surprisingly good. We did also have some listeners inform us that, yes, of course they show the Ten Commandments film on Easter weekend because it also coincides with the Passover, which is a fairly predominant part of that whole, story there in the Exodus. So, yeah, okay, I'm going to call that it's maybe not a conspiracy theory, but we have kind of left our listeners with all kinds of opportunity for feedback, and the great news is that people responded to the call. So, Jason, what do we have here for feedback?
We've actually got quite a few voice feedback, which is,
very nice.
Kind of uncommon for the good old podcast.
Everyone wants to be a part of big episode number 50. I think that's it.
That's right. They felt it coming.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. I mean, people could feel the excitement over the internets.
That's right. On the world wide web.
Yes.
So I got our first bit of feedback come, let's see, shortly after we did the episode. Let's take a listen here real quick. I can't figure out exactly who it might be.
Princess Bride! Princess Bride! I've seen it a million times. I knew that right away. And I want to see a picture of Chris in the bunny suit. Hey, it's Pat. I'll see you guys Tuesday. Sounded great on the podcast. I was rolling here. I was laughing so hard about the chocolate ham. God bless two guys. What is it? No, I can't even think of the name of the podcast. Two guys, a girl, and a Catholic podcast. There it is. I always get it wrong. And to think I haven't even had a beer yet. God bless you.
Wow. Okay. If you didn't listen to episode 49, you pretty much are confused right now.
That's all the incentive you need to go back and listen to episode 49.
It's true.
Of course, that was our good friend Pat Ryan from Relevant Radio. I think only on a Catholic podcast, to borrow a line from Jason, only on the Catholic podcast will you hear, I haven't even had a beer yet.
That's right. Wow.
It's so true. True Catholic right there.
You're definitely not going to hear that on Two Guys, a Girl, and a Baptist podcast.
Nope. You will not.
One day we ought to do this show as Two Guys, a Girl, and a Baptist podcast just to see how it would be different. We could all do a little acting, just a role playing of sorts. Wow. Thanks, Pat. And of course, he was right. We did have a question, right? Jason dropped a not so obscure movie quote, and it was "The Princess Bride." The Princess Bride, as Pat so eloquently put it.
That's right. That's right. And we have a couple more feedbacks. One from our good friend Phil, and another from our other friend of the show, Ryan Ransom, and sometimes co-host or fill-in.
That's right.
Fill-in. And they also have some more background information on anybody want a peanut.
I don't even remember the context of that one, but that's good. Okay, so who are we going
Princess
with?
Princess Bride.
Is it Phil or Ryan here?
I think next up we have Phil's feedback. And Phil always sends us feedback when he's been running. He's a bit out of breath most times when he sends that feedback. It's either from the laughing or from the running, and I sure hope it's from the laughing.
All right, let's take a listen.
Hi, this is Phil Beyer. Taking a break on my Saturday morning long run. I'm compelled to offer feedback because of all of the reasons you offered in episode 49. As you wish, Jason, I need to at least first comment on the imminently quotable Rob Reiner movie. Certainly the most wonderful, amazing Andre the Giant film of all time.
Because there's so many of those.
True.
Man, Hunger Games, gosh. So I read all three books fairly recently, thanks to the generosity of a friend. And
you're welcome.
I was just really taken aback in the third book as to how, again, I'll also try not to spoil anything, but man, it gets super dark for me, at least from my perspective. And I really have trouble with the whole concept of the books being made into a movie because it's for young adults or children or whatever. So I just want to echo that warning to anybody listening that please, you know what you're getting yourself into, because I've heard references from other people kind of realizing what it's about after their children have read books or after they've gone to see the movie, and that just makes me sad. So anyway, good luck with all that, everybody out there. Anyway, there's spiritual feedback I wanted to leave, too. Wanted to respond to Christina's call for Lenten tradition to me recently. My family, we have three kids right now, and we recently started prayer together as a family. We pray a decade of the rosary every night together as a family. It's been tough to maintain, but we have to avoid or have to stop from time to time. But for the most part, every evening in Lent, we've been sitting there at a bed and praying a deck of the rosary. Kids have their little 10 bead little rosary things that they count on, and that keeps sufficiently distracted for at least 5 seconds. Well, the other thing I wanted to say is on pageantry in church. I'm from San Antonio, at least fairly recently. I've been in Austin Heights for about a year, and we had a great celebration in the Triduum during Easter season. I didn't have the chance to participate recently, and haven't had the chance to participate in my parish here now in Austin because of our young family. But man, it's really great too. I got that chill, Jason, just listening to you talk about hearing the Gloria for the first time after Lent, after it be the church being dark and hearing the word. So anyway, you guys are doing a great job. Sorry for the long feedback here, but again, you left me too many things to think about as I'm running that I wanted to call up.
All right.
That's awesome.
All right, so that was our good friend Phil. I got to give you guys a little bit of an update. Phil said sort of reluctantly that he has three kids because he and his wife were very, very close to having their fourth child. That they had their child on at about 5 o'clock in the morning-ish on Good Friday. So congratulations to the Beyer family and baby number four.
Congratulations.
This is Timothy Andrew is the name. And I am proud to say that though it is not yet official, that this will be a godchild of ours. So I'm beaming with pride over here.
Nice. Are we gonna do a live tweeting of the baptism?
I think it's only appropriate. You know, and then one more piece of response to Phil's feedback here. I haven't seen the Hunger Games film yet, but I hear one of the most difficult parts for a lot of people is the part towards the end where Snape kills Dumbledore. So, spoiler alert for those of you.
I think you got your books crossed.
What?
You know what? I have to commend Phil for even attempting to do a decade of the Rosary with three small children. I can't even imagine. It would be stop choking your sister over here.
So, with the Rosary.
With the Rosary, right.
It's not a guy wire.
Yeah. Aubrey, please take those out of your mouth.
Right. All right, so one more piece of feedback here, Jason.
We got one more, and that's, again, from our good friend Ryan Ransom. And speaking of silky smooth voices.
Indeed. Here's Ryan.
Hey, guys. This feedback is Two Guys, A Girl in the Catholic Podcast. A little behind on the shows, so I'm sure you guys already have the answer to this challenge, to this movie quote challenge. But in case you haven't, from episode 49, when Jason quoted, "No more rhymes now, I mean it, anybody want a peanut?" That would be, of course, from The Princess Bride, Fezzik speaking to Inigo Montoya on the ship as they leave Florence, much to the annoyance of Vizzini as they leave. So that's definitely The Princess Bride, probably one of the greatest movies ever, and I'm proud to say, and on some level kind of ashamed, that I could probably quote that entire movie front to back for how many times I've seen it.
I totally could, yeah, too.
The Princess Bride is that movie quote. And I don't think I said this at the beginning, but this is Ryan. Ryan Ransom, great fan of the show. So give it up, guys. If I didn't get it because I'm still behind, that's okay. But I just had to make sure somebody got that answer. So thanks, guys.
You know, the problem with Ryan's feedback is not that he was too late. It's that he didn't have the same enthusiasm of the Princess Bride. Princess Bride.
It was definitely inconceivable.
Inconceivable.
I do not think that word means what you think it means. All right. Guys, thank you for the feedback. Pat, Ryan, Phil, we appreciate you guys calling into the show. If you want to leave feedback, we're going to give opportunities on information on how to do that at the bottom of the show. So stick with us. We've got to actually do a show now. I mean, I feel like we've done a whole show here with just feedback, but we do have some topics of the day, some current events here as we get going on Two Guys, A Girl in the Catholic Podcast. And now we're all married folks, admittedly, for anyone confused, not to each other. That would be
That's
weird.
Right.
We're all married folks, and I think it's fair to say that all of us are pretty committed to our marriages, right?
I would say that.
I would hope so.
I would say so too.
Okay, good.
that whole vows before God thing kind of cinches that deal.
Kind of important. Well, let me tell you guys about a lock that's coming up in the state of Alabama. All right, so couples who are looking for a divorce in the future may find it difficult if they opt for what is called a covenant marriage proposed in a bill before the Alabama legislature. The bill would require couples who are entering into a covenant marriage to enter counseling before they're married and attend counseling if they want to get a divorce. But it also limits the reasons for which married couples can divorce. So if any Kardashians are considering moving to Alabama, this is maybe not the right time. So I believe, and maybe somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, I think we did something similar in Texas in the last legislative session where if you did this and you agreed to this type of marriage, then I think that they would waive the fees that it would cost to file for a marriage certificate or something like that. Right. Did you guys hear about that?
Yeah.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I believe that's correct, that they'll waive whatever fees. It's been a while, but I remember there's something involved that you have to go downtown and sign some papers and give them some money.
Yeah, there's that. So here are the only circumstances in which a couple could seek divorce. You guys ready for this?
Here we go. Drum roll.
All right. That was a terrible drum roll. One spouse has committed adultery. That's probably the worst drum roll item of all time, by the way.
Right.
Adultery is not what you want after a drum roll. I'm just saying for future reference. More for myself. I'm thinking out loud here. One spouse abandons the shared home and refuses to return for at least a year.
Okay.
The other spouse physically, emotionally, or sexually abuses the spouse seeking divorce or one of the couple's children. Reasonable.
Right.
Or the spouses have been living apart for at least 2 years. So those would be the only conditions.
So how does a spouse abandoning the shared home for a year and refusing to return for a year coincide with the spouses living apart for at least 2 years? That's kind of weird there.
That's a good question.
Well, maybe there's a difference. Like spouses living apart, maybe they live in different countries. Whereas one person runs away.
Yeah. Okay.
That's the only difference I can see.
Oh, okay. I can see that. Yeah. If somebody runs away as opposed to being illegally separated.
Right. Like in the army or like across seas or something like that.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I hadn't thought of it from that dimension. I'd be curious to know how that would work. If somebody's on deployment, does that count as your 2 years? Anyway, so what do you guys think? I mean, clearly we have a vocations crisis, and I'm not talking even just about the vocations to the priesthood, but really a vocations crisis when we talk about the married life, too. Do you think that this type of bill really helps solidify the covenant, the sacrament of marriage? Do you think it'll have an impact on people in the state of Alabama?
Well, it's interesting because they talk about, marriage counseling and whatever before and after, or before you're married and then when you're seeking a divorce. It's interesting because as Catholics, we all go through pre-Cana courses for before we get married in the church. But so here's the question: is would that count as the required counseling?
I imagine that I don't know. I don't know. I haven't actually seen the bill. I'd be curious to know if existing programs would qualify.
Right. That would be interesting.
State program. Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, then you get into a whole other deal. What if it is a state program, and do you really want the state then giving people the tools for a successful marriage? And can the state even provide those tools?
Right. I think that's my point. When I look at this, I'm like, really, do I want the state of Alabama? No, I don't. Do I want the state? In our case, the state of Texas getting involved in our marriage covenant? I would feel much more comfortable, obviously, with the church and her teachings and her methods and counseling, and having a good solid spiritual life as opposed to the state saying, yeah, here's a pamphlet to go through. I don't know. It seems off the wall to me.
Yeah, like I wonder if the state, it's a good in theory, it's a good intention in theory, but I wonder like if you could go to jail for refusing to do counseling for a divorce.
Ooh, that's a good point.
Or maybe pay some kind of civil penalty or something.
Right, or fine.
Yeah,
or
I don't know. I'd be really curious what the content of that counseling is going to look like. And, you know, we empower people of faith to perform marriage ceremonies. And it seems like in so many cases, in most cases, right, marriage is seen as something other than just a civil contract between two people. So, I don't know, having the state step in the middle of this process even more than it already is just seems kind of dangerous. Seems like you would overly rely on the state then at that point to say, well, they can make the best recommendations as to what's best for marriages.
Yeah, it seems kind of weird that, again, this is a voluntary program. Don't let anybody else out there think that we're talking about something that the state of Alabama is going to require you to do. But, again, if it's a voluntary program and they're even using kind of religious connotations here as a covenant marriage, it just kind of – it seems like maybe one of these instances and, you know, people talk about too much – religion in politics or politics in religion, it maybe just kind of seems like one of those things where maybe it's more of a pandering kind of legislation than actually somebody trying to get something done.
And we're people of faith who think that.
Yeah, I know.
Like maybe this is overreach.
Yeah, definitely. I think with the divorce side of it, if they just focused on like helping maybe providing counseling for divorces, that might save some marriages.
The thing is, though, marriage is spiritual. So what basis does the state use to then go step in and say why you should or shouldn't get divorced, right? So, I mean, I realize that they've got these criteria, and I think that they're fairly decent criteria, I suppose, from a very secular point of view. But, okay, so let's say you're headed towards divorce or you want a divorce, and you go to counseling. If that counselor doesn't have a spiritual backing, then what do they really have to offer?
Right.
I mean,
don't get divorced because you'll lose your tax incentives.
Because you'll have to give up half your stuff. I mean, you see what I mean?
Like you make a good point. We're not trying to minimize kind of what's going on or what the people in Alabama are trying to do. But you know, making the point of what can a secular government or secular organization do that your faith life is already supposed to be doing for you?
Absolutely. That's just the question I'm asking. I'm not trying to minimize it. I'm not trying to throw stones at it. I applaud the effort. I think it's well-intentioned, but I question its effectiveness, and I really question the right or place of the state to go be involved in something that truly is a spiritual reality of marriage. And I realize that even if the people don't see it that way, they still are entering into a spiritual covenant and uniting their souls with one another. They just don't really actually recognize that they are. So,
yep.
Got it.
You know, and Chris, you spoke earlier about there being a vocations crisis here in this country. And, you know, I mean, what can we do? You know, and there are programs here in the state of Texas from a vocation standpoint, maybe not a marriage standpoint, but maybe other vocations.
Absolutely. You know, marriage is kind of a soapbox that I get on sometimes because, number one, I really want to be good at my marital vocation and I want others to be good at it too. But, you know, one thing that we've got to realize is that there are many, many people who are not called to the married life, who are called to the single life, or called to the priesthood and religious life. Which is a great opportunity for us to share an interview that we had recently with some folks over from St. Mary's in College Station telling us about the upcoming Nun Run. That's right. I didn't know anything about it either. So let's take a break here and let you listen to this interview. And then we're going to come back and do some more of the show. So take a listen.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Two Guys, a Girl, and a Catholic Podcast. This is Jason Elizondo. And, you know, Chris, Christina, you've heard of the the Turkey Trot.
Mm-hmm.
We here in Austin, we have the Bun Run.
Love the Bun Run, Schlotsky's Bun Run.
Exactly, and there's I'm sure there's a few other things that I'm leaving out. But have you ever heard of the Nun Run?
Ooh, no, this one's new to me.
Okay, well, joining us today is Christine Cranley from St. Mary's in College Station, Texas. And Christine, thank you for joining us today on Two Guys Are Growing a Catholic Podcast.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure.
So, Christine, what is the Nun Run?
Well, the Nun Run is a trip that St. Mary's started about 12 years ago, 1998, maybe a little more than 12 years ago, 14. And it's a trip where we have some of the girls at St. Mary's travel to visit religious life, because we're very blessed in our lives often to have beautiful marriages to look at as we're discerning our vocation in life. But oftentimes we're not exposed to religious life and don't have a good understanding of what the life is like. So this is a trip that we take in order to educate ourselves on what religious life is like.
Oh, wow. And so you kind of, everybody gets in a bus and it's like a big vocations road trip then, huh?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. We have vans, but that's pretty much it.
Oh,
okay. So where all do you go? Tell us about the different orders that you'll visit on the Nun Run this year.
Well, every year we go to different communities. In the past, we've done a tour of Texas, and that one actually we drove more miles than we had ever before. But this year, we're going to go to the Midwest. So we're going to go to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and visit some Benedictines there. And then we're going to go to Kansas City, Kansas, and Kansas City, Missouri, visit the Little Sisters of the Poor, another group of Benedictines, the Apostles of the Interior Life, a new community called the Little Sisters of the Lamb. And then we're going to head off to St. Louis, and we're going to visit some Carmelites there, some Franciscans, and the Daughters of St. Paul.
Wow. And so you say this has been going on since, and I actually remember the first Nun Run. I'm class of 98 from A&M. And again, see, this comes up almost every interview. I like to throw that in there.
I don't know if anybody knew, but Jason is an Aggie.
And I remember this, and I remember seeing things at St. Mary's and all this, but you know, in the 12, 15 years that the Nun Run has been going on, have you ever had anybody who's just been on fire and just kind of told you guys, you know what, I'm not going to go back with you guys, I'm just going to stay here?
Well, I don't think we've ever left anyone behind, but
on purpose,
leave no potential
postulate
behind.
I don't know
behind.
If that would be the best discernment. You want to discern these things thoroughly, but we certainly have had women whose lives have been changed by the trip. Whether it be a deepening understanding of their call to religious life, or even, you know, this is a beautiful life, but now I can see that I'm not called. Or just giving an openness to further discernment later. So each experience varies.
That's interesting. Actually, that you bring up a very good point. There's always, I think that there's a lot of encouragement that's not going on nowadays that really should be, for people that maybe, if, you know, God, like you said, God doesn't call all of us to the religious life. Obviously, he calls a lot of us to either the single life or the married life. But being able to say, hey, you know what, I went through the process of discernment, and now I know that I'm not being called to this, because later on in life, you don't have to look back on your life and say, well, you know, I never gave God my yes to even think about it.
Exactly. Yeah, you never regret discerning and looking at it deeply and laying it before the Lord, because we believe that whatever he has for us is what he made us for, and that will be where our biggest flourishing is. So we lose nothing in taking the time to ask him and lay it before him and seek out his will for us.
Absolutely. And how many ladies do go on the Nun Run?
Well, it depends. We have had from anywhere from 23 to as little as 4. So it really depends on the amount of advertising we get out there and just people's schedules, but I think we're going to have a pretty good number this year. A lot of women have expressed interest. We weren't able to do it last year, so I don't know. I'm guessing around 10, but it could be more. It could be less. We'll just see.
Right, and I know that St. Mary's is, I mean, it's always, as far as the diocese goes, it's been a hotbed for vocations. I know there's a number of priests that we have in the diocese now that came out of that area, and it's just I think that the opportunity that y'all are doing out there is to have an event like the Nun Run is just it's incredible, because I haven't heard of many other places where that kind of discernment is available to either young women or young men to have that opportunity.
Yeah, we're really blessed here in that there seems to be a culture of discernment, so it's kind of like peer pressure in a way. So everyone's discerning what is God's will for my life. So if you've never heard the word before, it comes up in conversation, and so it's a positive peer pressure for people to just take a step back instead of, you know, we make plans since we're little. Oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. But this idea that God has a plan for us, and it's the plan that will bring us the most joy and the most glory to Him is a beautiful idea. And so just because it's so often talked about to each other, I think it allows people to ask those questions of themselves at a time in their life when they're making such tremendous decisions.
Right, yeah. And so, Christine, if people are interested, so if somebody hears this podcast and they're like, you know what, that's something I'd really like to do or get involved in, how would they get in contact with y'all over at St. Mary's?
Well, it would depend. Our group is going to be a pretty specific group. So it's college-age students, and so we are allowing some others to come with us, but they would have to be about that age range, and so each case is different. But I would also encourage, if anyone hears this podcast and is maybe in a different time in life or has other friends that are interested, they could also just call up communities and set up trips for themselves. Actually, that's how the Nun Run began here. It's an interesting story. I had a friend at Texas A&M who told me she was discerning with this community, and she said, if you visit this community, you're never going to want to leave. And I remember thinking, that's ridiculous. I don't believe you. And so I was thinking about it. It didn't leave my mind. And so spring break was coming up. So I talked to my campus minister at the time, and I just said, you know, I'm thinking of going up to this community for spring break because my friend says you never want to leave, and I just can't believe that that's true. And my campus minister got all excited and said, well, why don't we invite a group of girls to go with us? And so that first Nun Run, I think we just had, I can't remember, 5 or 10, but that's how they began. And then the next trip that we took, we had a larger group, 23, and at that time, my campus minister had alerted EWTN, and so they asked us to come in and do an interview at the end of our trip to kind of talk about how the trip went. And at that time was when we kind of coined the phrase Nun Run, and it went viral, I guess, and so everyone uses that term. But it was really kind of neat how the Holy Spirit just kind of set aflame with just a thought, well, I should go visit this community. I wonder if anyone else is interested, how it just exploded into a 15-year tradition.
And that's a catchy phrase, Nun Run. You know, I think that's memorable for any, you know, lady, you know, that is, you know, possibly in the college age to, you know, remember and to think of St. Mary's.
Yeah, so. I like it better than the turkey trot. Much better than the turkey trot.
We have the armadillo dash here, and I'm not quite sure armadillo's dash, but.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, making that trip on 71, those armadillos, they don't go very quick. There's lots of poop in that as well.
Yeah.
Well, Christine, thank you so much for coming on the show this weekend and joining us and telling us about the Nun Run. And I guess if there's people out there at other colleges, and you know, maybe you can go and talk to your own campus minister about starting your own Nun Run at, you know, maybe at Texas State. You have the UCC here in Austin, the Baylor Catholics, and you could have a statewide nun run. It'd be amazing.
Wouldn't that be neat? And Jason, I actually didn't answer your question purposely, but if anyone is interested in possibly coming on ours, we are going May 15th through the 25th. And again, I have to be selective about who we take because we have to make sure we have enough for the Aggies. But you're welcome to contact me. My email information is on our website at aggiecatholic.org. So if you just look up Christine Cranley, you can find my contact information, and people can feel free to call and ask either about our trip or starting their own at their own campus.
I think that's a great idea. I think we need to push for having statewide college nun runs from here on forward.
That would be amazing.
If you're out there listening and you feel God's call, you know, you don't have to go to St. Mary's. You don't have to be an Aggie, but I'm sure it helps. I know God's an Aggie. And
so is Jason Elizondo, I hear.
That's right. So, again, we want to thank Christine for coming on the show and talking to us about the nun run. And hopefully maybe next year or, you know, Christine, if things go well in the discernment process in May, maybe you can come back and give us some feedback on how the event went.
Absolutely, I'd be happy to.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate everything that you do for the young folks out there at St. Mary's, and just thank you for doing this event.
Well, thank you, Jason, Christina, and Chris.
All right. Well, God bless, Chris. Christine, thanks for coming on the show.
Yes, thank you for coming.
You're welcome. God bless you, too.
We will burn even underwater. Welcome back to Two Guys, a Girl, and the Catholic Podcast. It's time to take a look at church news, things happening here in the Austin Diocese and in the Church Universal. Take it away.
All right. So registration has opened for the 2012 Catholic New Media Conference. It's going to be held in Arlington, Texas on August 29th through the 31st. You can go to cnmc.sqpn.com. to register, and you can also find out about the speakers. The keynote speakers have been announced, and our very own Jennifer Fulweiler from here in Austin, Texas, is going to be one of the keynote speakers, along with Elizabeth Scala, Cliff Ravenscraft. If you're a podcaster or a podcast fan, you know who Cliff is. And then also there's going to be talks from Bishop Christopher Cohen he's the apostolic administrator of the Archdiocese of Indianapolis and a avid tweeter. So if you're a big fan of tweeting bishops, you should follow Bishop.
And who isn't?
And who isn't, exactly, especially if you listen to this podcast.
Without a doubt.
Exactly.
Father Roderick Von Hogan, the co-founder of SQPN, is going to be speaking as well. And our very good friend Brandon Vaught is going to be speaking. Look at this. We know all these people. And Patrick Padley over from SQPN, he's a podcaster as well. All those and many more is going to be going on at the Catholic New Media Conference going on in August. So you can go on over to cnmc.sqpn.com and you can register, and you may run into some familiar faces while you're there.
Very good. Thank you, Jason. Catholic Charities of Central Texas is hosting an open house on May 4th, 2012, from 8:30 in the morning to 10 o'clock, with a ribbon-cutting ceremony at 9 o'clock in the morning. The public is invited to tour their new facilities at 1625 Rutherford Lane in Austin, Texas. You can also meet staff members and find out more about the many programs and services Catholic Charities provides to the Diocese of Austin. For more information, contact Sarah Rose at 512-651-6105 or sarah-rose at ccctx.org.
Thank you, Chris. Next week, we'll be having a special guest from Catholic Charities to talk about the open house. And the Austin Diocese Council of Women will be holding their 63rd annual convention on Monday, April 23rd through Thursday, April 24th. This will be at the North Austin Marriott in Round Rock, Texas. Bishop Joe Vasquez will be attending the banquet dinner on Monday. The registration fee is $45. Go to adccw.org for more information.
Awesome. And we had a great opportunity this week to sit down with Heather Gardner from the Austin Coalition for Life to talk about the recently wrapped up 40 Days for Life that went on during the Lenten season, and also about some other things that are going on with Austin Coalition for Life. So, again, another interview here on Two Guys Who Grow on the Catholic Podcast. So stick with us for this, and after the interview, we'll be back for our wild card segment. We are joined by a very special guest. It's Heather Gardner from the Austin Coalition for Life, here to tell us a little bit about the 40 Days for Life. Heather, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I'm doing wonderful. Thank you. How are you doing?
Great. Great. Thanks. Thanks for being on the show. Tell us a little bit for those who don't, who are not familiar with the 40 Days for Life. First, give us the 30,000 foot view. What is the 40 Days for Life all about?
Okay, sure thing. So 40 Days for Life is a prayer campaign that has several aspects to it. Mainly the purpose is to end abortion in the community peacefully and prayerfully. And so the way that the participants of the campaign do so is they sign up for times every week during the 40 days to go out actually physically to the front of the abortion clinics to pray. And some people pray silently and some people bring groups to pray. And so there's lots of different people from different backgrounds that join these prayer vigils. And depending on the location, they will go several hours every single day, every single day of the week, and they'll last 40 days straight. There are two campaigns every year. There's one that that's in the spring that coincides with the season of Lent, and then there's always one in the fall that usually begins somewhere towards the end of September and goes through the beginning of November. And 40 Days for Life was actually started in Texas in Bryan College Station. And it was meant to be a one-time thing, but there were people in other communities and cities that kind of got wind of it and heard about it and wanted to duplicate that effort in their own city. And so in 2007, that was in 2004. And then in 2007, 40 Days for Life went national and then international. And so it has been in over 440 cities across the world. Several countries, including Denmark, Ireland, Australia, Brazil, Portugal, Spain, England, lots of other communities and cities across the world that have done the campaign in their own community. So to date, the statistics for that are they have a record of almost 6,000 babies that have been saved that they know of. From abortion because of the peaceful, prayerful presence outside of the clinics. 69 abortion clinic workers have left their jobs forever and had a conversion.
Wow.
And the latest result is 22 abortion facilities have completely shut down their doors after being the site of a 40 Days for Life campaign. And there's also a lot of great things about 40 Days for Life. The purpose is mainly to have the prayer vigils, but also to have information for these women so that they can go to other places, not just about choose life and, okay, see you later, good luck, but choose life and here are places that can help you do that, whether it's financially or with material goods. So all kinds of amazing things that that take place because of the 40 Days for Life campaign. And so we do have that here in Austin, fortunately. We participate twice a year with the rest of the country and the world. And we've seen a lot of blessings. So
that is amazing. You know, I went to school, and again, I know Chris hears this incessantly, but I went to school at A&M, so I'm familiar with the, I guess, with 40 Days for Life and
That's
St. Mary's and all the wonderful things that go on over there. But I had no clue that they had gone worldwide like that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And the directors of the national campaign, Sean Carney and David B. Wright, were actually the ones who started it along with Mary Lisa Carney in College Station. And they had no idea that it was going to be this big. They again, thought it was going to be a one-time thing to get their community motivated and create attention and awareness about the abortion clinic in the community. And, I mean, God obviously took that and has done amazing things with it since then.
Yeah, Sean Carney is a pretty incredible guy and has an amazing story to tell. He was in Austin, I think about, what was it, a year ago, maybe at the Austin Crisis Pregnancy Center dinner, and spoke about, you know, about the interactions he had kind of as the quote unquote enemy of Abby Johnson there at the time when she was working, kind of heading up the Planned Parenthood facility there in Bryan College Station. And just an amazing story to tell. It's an amazing program.
Definitely. Yeah. Abby Johnson is actually, yeah, she was the director of the Planned Parenthood in Bryan College Station and had seen multiple campaigns before she herself had a conversion and left in 2009. So she's certainly not the only clinic worker that has left, but she is the one that was the highest ranking one to leave. And so she's certainly had a huge impact on the pro-life movement and joined the pro-life movement to work hard to end abortion and create awareness about the abortion industry. So she's got a pretty amazing testimony herself, as well as many others that are a direct result of 40 Days for Life. So
that's right. And that is such a beautiful story. I have read her book and I admire her story so much. But when is the next 40 Days for Life coming up? And I mean, how can someone listening get involved with the next one?
Sure. Well, the next internationally coordinated campaign will be September 26th, which is on a Wednesday. And it'll go through I think it's November 4th.
40 days later. I'm going to guess. 40 days later.
40 days later, exactly. Yes. And one thing that we do here in Austin in order to create awareness about the campaign is to go to as many churches as we can within a month and a half or 2 months leading up to the campaign. And so many people will hear about the campaign through their churches, and that's how they can get involved. There's always an informational table in the foyer at the churches that are participating. And other ways are, of course, online. We have, in Austin, we have our website, www.austincoalitionforlife.com. And during the campaign season, as we call it, we will have an opportunity. We have links and buttons on our website for people to sign up. And all they do is fill out a form saying which hour, day, and location that they want to sign up for.
Great. And I understand you are with the Austin Coalition for Life. And if someone is eager to get started today or, you know, right after listening to this podcast to start volunteering, is there a way for someone to get involved with the Austin Coalition for Life to volunteer or become involved?
Yes, definitely. So the purpose of the Austin Coalition for Life is to have year-round prayer vigils as much as possible. So we want the prayer presence and the education and the help to spread past and beyond the 40 days. And so that's why we have a permanent organization, the Austin Coalition for Life, in order to give people an opportunity to do so. So right now, we finished, of course, our 40 days campaign on Palm Sunday, and we still have people who continue to go out to the sidewalks, not as many, but people who make a regular commitment to go out to the sidewalks every week to pray. And several ways that you can do that are you can either go to the website, austincoalitionforlife.com, or you can email info@austincoalitionforlife.com. And that's for anything, to figure out what we're about, to ask more questions, to figure out how you can get involved, or anything that you want to know about the pro-life movement here in Austin or the abortion industry. And then we have a schedule that we keep up with for figuring out who all will be at the clinics at when and where. And so if someone wants to get on that schedule, they're more than welcome to do that. So all they have to do is call or click or email.
That's wonderful. Is there anything else that Jason, Chris, that you guys would like to add or ask Heather?
No, I'm just glad to hear. Okay. So you guys just wrapped up the one that coincides with the season of Lent.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about, give us some inspiration, tell us some success stories, give us something to kind of follow up on that. What have you heard about that that 40 Days for Life campaign.
Definitely. Well, I'll go ahead and start with our very own community. And as a result from this past spring 40 Days for Life, we had a volunteer, we had a representative from at least 75 different churches join us in the prayer vigils. And the Austin Coalition for Life and 40 Days for Life are both ecumenical, non-denominational groups, coalitions. And so we're made up of many different churches, many Catholics and many non-Catholics, different Protestants and evangelicals. So we had people from 75 different churches join us. Over 750 people participated in the prayer vigils for this spring. We had what we call sidewalk counselors, which are people who kind of take that next step to reach out to women who are going into the abortion clinic. So while we do have people that simply come to pray, which is very, very important, we have other people who want to do more, who want to learn how to reach out to the women and talk to them. And so we have a special sidewalk counselor training, which there's also information about that on our website. We hold one at least once a month. And we had 24 brand new sidewalk counselors trained for this past spring. There were, for the first time ever in the history of 40 Days for Life here in Austin, since 2009, we were able to have four prayer vigils simultaneously at all four abortion clinic locations, because there are four total here in Austin, and we just never had enough volunteers to do all four in the past. And because of the efforts and the widespread education and community outreach that we've had, we were able to get enough people this time to do one at all four locations. So that was a huge blessing in and of itself. There were hundreds of informational brochures about healthcare alternatives in the community that were handed out to these women at the clinics. And several women actually sought healing from past abortions as well. Not only are we there for the women who are pregnant, but we're also there for the women who have already had abortions. And we recognize that that's a tragic thing that they went through. And so many of them either are seeking healing from a past abortion or will be seeking healing in the future, most likely. And so we're there to give them information about that as well. And the biggest statistic that everyone wants to hear is we had, just for the 40 days in the spring, we had 16 women that we know of turn around and choose life. And that was women that were going for an abortion appointment that day, and they talked with someone or they saw someone out praying on the sidewalk and they told somebody, because of your presence, I can't do this. So 16 women chose life, and that's 17 babies, because one of those mothers is actually pregnant with twins.
Wow.
So
that's awesome.
We were amazed and ecstatic to have that information. And there's so many more that we don't know of. As we always say, that's only the ones that we know of.
Sure.
And I'll give you an example. When I actually started working at the Coalition for Life in College Station first before I came to Austin. And while I was volunteering and then working in College Station, we received a photograph in the mail at the Coalition for Life with a woman, a young woman, and her little baby, with a note attached to it that said, I just wanted you guys to know that at about 10 months ago, I was scheduled to have an abortion, and I know that it was your group that was standing outside praying for me, and I just wanted to send you a picture of me and my little baby right now. And I thank you so much for being out there. So we never even knew that she had chosen life that day. The only reason we knew about her is because she sent us that picture months later, which was incredible. And that's just, I mean, that's a testament to only God knows how many babies are spared and women are saved from that tragedy. Just, you know, not everybody is comfortable enough to come. It's a brave thing for them to even come and admit, you know, I was about to make a huge mistake, and I'm not, you know, thank you, I'm not going to anymore. So that's all that we know of. And that brings us in Austin to a total of 133 women that have chosen life since 2009 and 136 babies.
Unbelievable. That's so wonderful.
That's amazing.
Heather. Definitely. We know that we're having an impact, even though we can't always see the fruits of our labor.
Sure. And,
what's amazing about Austin is the pro-life community here. There are so many different pro-life groups. There's pregnancy centers, there's pro-life clinics, and other organizations that are just set up because they see the need and they want to help these women and their families in need. And that's one of the things that we do is we refer these women to these places so that they know that they can get real help. And a lot of times the pregnancy centers are key to letting us know about these saves as well, because sometimes a woman will take information, but she won't have said why she was there. Or maybe she just took it, you know, when she was driving out, she took it when she rolled her window down, and little did we know that she was actually pregnant and considering abortion. And we'll get a call from the pregnancy centers later saying, hey, we just wanted to let you know that someone got information from you guys at the sidewalk and they chose life in our clinic today. So
that is incredible. Heather, I think we could keep you on. Numerous. I think we could keep you on for a whole show just telling us stories like that, because it's so inspiring. And I want people to, I want to remind everybody again, just one more opportunity to go to the website, AustinCoalitionForLife.com, or email info@AustinCoalitionForLife.com to find out more. I'm sure you guys have great resources there on the site as well, right? The stories, these kinds of just telling the story of the great work that you all are doing. So I know, you know, for all of us, say thank you, not because we know that you need thanks, but because, you know, not all of us have stepped up to go be out there and you're helping lead the cause, and we appreciate it very much.
Definitely. Thank you. And I do want to add that from my own personal experience, when I first got involved with sidewalk ministry, with actually being on the sidewalk in front of an abortion clinic, I was scared out of my wits. I mean, I heard about it from my friends when I was a student at Texas A&M and thought, wow, there's no way I could ever do that. That's amazing. I mean, that's crazy. I was very pro-life, but had never heard of people standing and praying outside of an abortion clinic. And then I did it. And it was scary, but it was such a great, wonderful thing that I did, because I was just being obedient to that call. I knew that God was calling me to do that. And God is calling all of us to take some role, you know, whether it be helping at a pregnancy center or standing and praying outside on a sidewalk in front of a clinic. I was scared, definitely. And there's many people that go out to the clinic that will tell you that same thing, that they were kind of scared the first time. And why is that? That's because we realize the reality of what's going on behind those walls. And we're afraid of persecution, you know, but that's Christ promised us persecution. And that's okay. As long as we pick up our cross and follow him and be obedient to it, that's the most important thing. And it's not about, am I going to go out and save a baby today? It's not about, you know, getting those hardcore facts or evidence in order to prove that we need to be out there. It's being obedient to that call.
Amen.
Amen. All right. Well, Heather, thank you again. Thank you not only for the work that you're doing, but for being here on Two Guys, a Girl, and a Catholic Podcast. We appreciate you. We're joining you in prayer, and just thanks. That's all we can say. And God bless. So thanks again for being on the show.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed being here, and God bless you guys, and thank you for the work that you're doing as well.
Thanks.
Yes, God bless you, and we're praying for you.
Thank you. Likewise.
We will burn even underwater. Welcome back to Two Guys, a Girl, and a Catholic Podcast. It's time for our wild card segment, where anything goes, and each of us selects a story to just throw out there and see where it goes. So, Jason, lead us off again.
All right. So I've got a story here from NPR. I'm not really much of an NPR listener nor a reader, but this one caught my attention. The 2080 census. What will the world be like?
Just around the corner.
Just around the corner, that's right. And granted that probably none of us will be around for the 2080 census. Well, you never know. People are living longer.
I'll be here.
I should be around.
Think about what show number will be on for the 2080 census. Just think about that.
That's right. NPR had some questions here they took from the Hawaii Research Center for Future Studies. I want to study there.
What?
Because I bet you they have a time machine.
They're just doing drugs and dreaming up questions like, hey, man, let's sit on the beach and surf. Think about questions we'll ask ourselves in 68 years.
I'm telling you, this ranks right up there with the most useless degrees. I've got a PhD in future studies. Thank you very much.
Yes, I studied at the University of Hawaii. Oh, good. I bet you're a pretty awesome surfer. Great.
Yeah, I've got a master's in I got a doctorate in future studies, a bachelor's in surfing, and a master's in basket weaving. I am completely
basket weaving.
So some of the questions that they came up with was, do you have a home or a biophysical domicile? If so, is it on the Earth, the Moon, Mars, or elsewhere?
Biophysical domicile. Is that like those pods they kept people in the Matrix?
I think so.
Hmm.
Yeah, actually.
The second question actually kind of got me thinking. It's like, what is your current sex? Again, this is like...
Really? Wow. Your current... Yeah. Yes. Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So many comments, so little time. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then the third question was, what is your permission number for drinking water?
Wow.
Oh, no.
That does not bode well for the future.
No.
Again, because it comes from the Hawaii Research Center for Future Studies, it has got to be true.
I'm convinced. You guys drop another tab of LSD and have a good time out there.
That's right. So thinking, what is it, 70 years, 58 years in the future, 52 years in the future, what questions would you like to see on the 2080 census?
Ooh.
Maybe how many marriages a person's gone through?
Ooh, that would be an interesting one.
I mean, hopefully, yeah, mine would be one. But...
You'd probably be in the minority.
Right. I would imagine you would be. Yeah.
Hmm.
Let's see. I'd be curious.
Like, this isn't one that I would like to see, but one that I kind of foresee a little bit. Like, how far are you along in your allocated number of children?
Oh, yeah.
Whoa.
You know, you got to be thinking at some point, we're just going to go totally off the rails with this whole population control mindset that we seem to be in.
Yeah, I can see that. Oh, hello.
Who is it?
Hello.
Who is it?
Someone's calling in the show right now.
Man.
It's the hotline. One thing that I was thinking, though, that looking at this from a, you know, they always, one of the prime data points on the census is race.
Mm-hmm.
So with the way things are going, you know, do you think that's actually still going to be relevant information in 2080, your race? Because I mean, Melissa's Caucasian, uh-huh. I'm Hispanic. Uh-huh. And so our children, you know, where, you know, is that even going to be an issue in 2080?
Good question. It's a very good question. I think, surely people will still identify themselves by race, right? On some level?
I think so.
It seems like we're pretty stuck in that box, right?
I mean, well, I don't know. If your biophysical domicile is on the Earth or is on the Moon or Mars, will you really care? Are you human?
And is Martian one of your options for race?
Oh.
See?
Interesting.
See? Yeah. There we go.
Mm.
There we go. Very nice, Jason. Pondering the future here. I believe we've all qualified for at least 3 hours in future studies via this conversation. I'm just saying.
I don't think those hours are transferable.
Oh, man. If you're listening down in Hawaii, just know we're expecting our credit here soon. All right, Christina, what do you got for the wild card this week?
Well, we just wrong word. We just saw the anniversary, the 100th anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic. So this is not a celebration. Quite a few people died. I can't believe it's already been 100 years. Jack, don't drown, Jack. Hold on.
No.
Okay, sorry.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That song used to be my favorite song for many years.
Oh, well, then... Would you like to sing it for us?
I'm sure Celine Dion's not listening, because if she is, we're still getting sued.
we're just excerpting it. I think we're good. Public use.
Fair use.
Fair use. Okay, sorry. Go ahead, Christina.
Oh, that's okay.
I saw Titanic and I couldn't help myself.
Oh, hey. It brings back all the memories of the movie.
I'll never let go, Jack. I'll never let Jack, go.
Don't let go.
And then she pushes his cold, dead carcass into the water. Go ahead.
That's cold.
I'm just saying. She did.
Well.
On another
boat. How many Catholics do you think were aboard the Titanic?
Let's see. They were coming from Northern Ireland, number one. Yeah. I bet a good number. I don't know. I don't even know how many people were actually on the Titanic.
There were about 2,223 people aboard the Titanic, but I don't know how many people were Catholic.
Got it. But I do know. I thought you had a number for us.
Yeah, it was a loaded question.
Yeah, it was a loaded question. She built us up and let us down a little bit.
I know. I'm so sorry. But there was probably more than half of those people died. Like over, 1,500 died. So more than half. There were three priests aboard the Titanic. So for sure, we know that three people were Catholic aboard the Titanic. And it's really interesting because I didn't know there were priests aboard the Titanic. Like they just never... I think in the movie they show a clip of people praying mm-hmm. a little bit, but we weren't really given any insight that there were priests. I mean, what about you guys? Did you know there were priests on the Titanic?
James Cameron did not let us know that there were any priests on board the Titanic.
No.
Yeah, not at all.
Or on that planet in Avatar.
In Avatar. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, or Avatar either, yeah.
Yeah, good point.
But anyway, so... Anyway, these three amazing priests were aboard the Titanic, and there was an eyewitness account put into, I believe, a Jesuit journal. It's referenced from the Catholic News Agency, okay. And we have the link in the show notes here. And an eyewitness says that all Catholics aboard desired the assistance of the priests with greatest fervor, and they also... the priests encourage people to, say acts of contrition and prepare themselves to meet the face of God because they knew they were going to die.
Wow.
And so, I mean, one priest was even by, I think, one of the popes, one of the popes even said that, I believe during this time, 1912, he even said that one of them may have been a martyr because of how he gave his life to the people there aboard the Titanic. I mean, instead of getting onto the lifeboats, they devoted the next 2.5 hours to, try and save the souls of the people aboard the ship, which is totally amazing. Because that's definitely something that we never even knew about. And so, I mean, what would you guys do in a similar situation if you were a Catholic aboard a ship, about to drown? What would you do? Would you try and evangelize, or would you try and get on a lifeboat? How would you handle that?
Oh, wow!
I think. I make kind of light of James Cameron, but
right.
One of the things that he showed on there on that movie that was very, very, I guess, very touching and very, I know now looking back on it, is there's a particular scene where the family is putting their children to bed because they knew that they couldn't get off the ship.
Yeah.
And I think about that and I'm like, oh, I know for myself, I would try to do everything I could to get my family off the ship, but personally, I mean, I would... think that would be my main goal. If it was all of us there, if it was just myself, I don't know. I think I would want to say that I would do the unselfish thing and let other people on and just maybe go to confession if I could and prepare to meet my maker. But I don't know. That's a tough thought to be in that position. You know, chances are I'd probably just crawl up in a ball and cry like a baby.
Yeah, I think I probably would too. I'm pretty much a wimp, and I think I can go ahead and admit that to myself and to you all and anyone listening to the show. I would hope in that situation, and again, I'm with Jason, it changes drastically if my family's on the boat. But if I'm there, I like to think, hopefully, you know, you just go, all right, this is it for me. But, you know, in that case where there are other families there and you go, okay, well, we're going to make sure that these people get to stay together and get to be part of their family. I like to think that I could step up in that way, but who knows? I mean, these men that did this as priests, made an incredible sacrifice. Cause you know, they came as clergy, you know, that they had a position of prominence, certainly. And had the ability to get on the life rafts. So for them not to, and to go down hearing confession and giving people that spiritual peace as they prepared for their ultimate demise, that's a pretty amazing testimony. Really is.
Right. And there was one priest for sure that had a spot on a lifeboat, and he gave it up for someone to hear confessions and you know, basically help people prepare for death.
That's so. Very cool. Very yeah. cool. Well, as I often do here on Two Guys, A Girl, and Catholic Podcast and The Wild Card, Christina always has these kind of profound stories, spiritually challenging, and then I go ahead and ruin it right after that. and I'll start with this. I'll go ahead and ask you guys, what was the kind of dumpiest place you ever lived? What was the worst place you ever lived?
There was my first apartment in college. Mm-hmm. It had wood panels on, like wood paneling, Ooh. Fake wood paneling on the walls.
Nice.
And y'all missed this when we were speaking off, when we were in one of our breaks, but Christina was talking about creepy crawlies and the giant size Mothra roaches that we have here in Texas, and I'm pretty sure that a bunch of them lived in that apartment as well. So yes,
very nice. Ooh. That is the quintessential college apartment right there. Christina, what about you?
Well, I didn't actually live there, but it was Chris's old house he lived in Denver. He lived in a basement of a very old house, like over 100 years old.
Oh my!
And the whole downstairs was infested with mice.
Like
he would tell me, like one time a mouse had like it was like just not wanting to die, and it got caught into two traps.
Oh my!
And like there was this moment That's where the mouse awesome and Chris mouse. Were like looking at each other, and it was like insane. Like Chris would tell me he would be up at night here listening to mice like chew his walls away. And, like, he'd listen to them, like, scurry, like, on the floor.
Did they have a moment of understanding between two creatures as he looked at this mouse, you know, that had been caught?
I think so. It was like, a very
this
deep
sounded
moment.
Very, this sounded very kind of almost spiritual moment between Chris yeah. and the mouse.
And the mouse was in absolute pain because it was caught in two traps, one on each leg.
What an awesome mouse, though. It's yeah. like, one trap? Nah. Forget it. Two traps? Ooh, okay.
And he can still walk, to my knowledge.
Oh, we're going to have to bring Chris on the show at some point. I've got to hear this story in full. This may be my wild card segment for the next show. Bring Chris on and tell. Okay, so I asked this. Now, I lived in a pretty bad place myself, and the place I lived was in Fort Worth. I was also in college. It was literally across the street from TCU's campus. And so it was a kind of an efficiency apartment, if you guys are familiar with that, where it's really just one room. So you have okay. sort of a corner for your bed and a corner for your TV and a corner for your little dining table and a corner for your kitchen. And then I had a little bathroom and a closet kind of tucked away in the back. But what really made this place unique is that it wasn't an apartment at all. It was actually one of the bedrooms of a four-bedroom apartment, and the landlord had taken plywood and screwed it into the door frame to the door that separated my quote-unquote apartment from the rest of the quote-unquote apartment.
That's ingenuity right there.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah.
So I didn't have what you would call a door to my apartment. Like a front door that you go in and you lock and it's properly secured. I had a sliding glass door only. That was Ooh. The one way in and out of my apartment. And let's just say this was the kind of place where one day I was walking over to get my mail, and you passed by the pool, which was a cement hole in the ground. And let's just say it wasn't a cement hole in the ground. They didn't tell anybody. They just filled it in with concrete, kind of like under the darkness of night. Wow. It was that kind of place. But, okay, where am I going with this? Why are we talking about it? As bad as I wanted to get out of my lease for that place, I never resorted to this. Just 1 week after Josie Chinchilla and Michelle Callen moved into their new home in, it doesn't matter where. It's not here in Austin. The couple and her two children plotted into the lobby of a local hotel at 1:15 in the morning and asked for a room. Why, you may ask? Because as soon as the family had settled into the three-bedroom ranch, they began to suspect that they were not its only tenants. Family would come home and find their clothes and towels ejected from the closets and strewn on the floors. Doors would creak open and slam closed in unoccupied areas of the house. Lights switched on and off without human intervention, and at night footsteps could be heard from the kitchen after everyone was tucked in. An unintelligible whispering seemed to fade in and out of thin air. So,
creepy.
They demanded to be out of their lease. In fact, they're suing the landlord for not disclosing that this was a haunted location. Which I guess begs the question, you guys. Hauntings?
You know, growing up in San Antonio, there was always talk of ghosts and all that, especially, you know, obviously during Halloween and all this kind of stuff. But I don't know. I mean, I don't have the catechism in front of me, but I'd be interested to see what the catechism says about that.
We may have to report back on that one.
Yeah.
I have the catechism in front of me.
Can you look up ghosts, please?
Yes. Let's see here.
I bet you get ghosts, comma, holy.
Right.
I bet it's not in the index. I'm going to do a little Google search here.
Catholic. You know, I wonder, and thinking about the, you know, talking about creepy crawlies, you know, it could have just been a big R-O-U-S.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I was thinking.
That's interesting, though.
But we may have to provide an answer on a future show here. Yes, maybe if anyone knows, this is an opportunity for feedback. So if you know what the church's teaching is on the belief in ghosts and spirits, if you will, of the deceased, then we would be interested to know what you have to say. And or if you have a good ghost story to share, then we really want to hear that here on Two Guys, a Girl, and a Catholic Podcast. But guys, I think we're out of time. I think we're out of time between our interviews, between our feedback, and everything else we've had going here on the show. I think it's time to go ahead and give people the feedback information. So if you want to call, give us your ghost story, or share what you think the church's teaching is on ghosts and spirits, call 512-200-ACNM. That's 512-200-2266. You can also leave feedback via email at feedback@austincnm.com. That's feedback@austincnm.com. Austin CNM is the home of Austin Catholic New Media, so go check out all of the great new content going live all the time. Also, while you're there, stop by and donate to the cause. We also appreciate your prayers and supporting the ministry and the new evangelization done by Austin Catholic New Media. We ask for your support in prayer and also financially, if you would not mind helping underwrite some of the expenses to keep the site live and just taking care of all the needs of the ministry. No one earns a salary here. It's all about just bringing great content to you. And reach out to any of us on Twitter anytime. You can get Jason at JD Zondo. That's at JDZONDO. You can get me, Chris Williston, at C Williston VI. That's C W I L L I S T O N V I. And Christina at Christina120. C R I S T I N A 120. Guys, it's been quite the show, number 50.
It sure has.
Until next time, God bless you, everybody, and we'll come back at you next week.
God bless, everybody.
God bless you all.